In our last talk, those of us who were together will remember that we spoke from the sayings of Saint Anthony the Great on matters that are vital and Christian, because, as you know, we have all sorts of opinions and we give our own solutions and answers to the questions that trouble us in our own way. I also want those of you who don't attend the Thursday talk to know that on Thursday I gave a talk as well, not of course on the things we spoke about on Sunday, but on other sayings of Anthony the Great. And tonight I'll give yet a third one, again from this same saint. So we should understand that these will be three talks by this holy man, with no connection between one and the next. In the first talk, I see from my notes we spoke about who are, and who deserve to be called, rational people, and also the marks of the rational person, who deserves to be called, and truly is, a human being, who deserve to be called free people. We also said that learning without Christ is no learning at all. And there was a discussion, too, about misfortune, that often we say a person is wretched, or that misfortune has struck us because of some death, a financial shipwreck, or something else that happened in the home, when something truly deserves to be called misfortune, and when in reality it is not misfortune at all. In the previous talk, we also said that we must be watchful, because when we think we are alone, that no one can hear us, see us, or find out what we are doing, we sin, even though we are sinning in the presence of God. We also said that evil came afterward. It is secondary. Man created it, God did not. And the close of Thursday, the day before yesterday, was the philosophy of life in relation to death, how a person ought to think about it and how he ought to picture it. Because many people, under the fear of death, I know how it will be for me down there in the earth where they'll go, where they'll find themselves, suffer in this world. We spoke of how death is freedom, especially for the person who makes some effort for this day of his death and for his life to come. And so tonight I'll be able to offer an answer again from this holy man, that hardships, he says, the bad and ugly things are needed for the good things to be appreciated. Because a person, for example, if he does not lose his health, if he does not fall ill, does not appreciate his health, he has to lose it to understand what it was he had, what a gift God had given him, and how much he ought to have cared for it. That is why people say, if we don't suffer the worst, we don't appreciate the best. And you know, we live now in a time that fits our situation only too well. But that is not our subject here. We Christians will undergo much in order to appreciate what God had given us, which we did not appreciate as we should have. So he says, bitter things are necessary if we are to appreciate the good. Allow me to convey this in his own words. He says that people must first gain experience of sorrow. They must come to know sorrow through experience. Only then do we perceive pleasures and joy. Only then will we understand what we have lost. For example, he says, he who has not thirsted does not drink with pleasure, who appreciates water and finds it sweeter, the one who is thirsty who has gone without water. Nor does he who has not hungered eat with pleasure, who finds even a dry crust of bread delicious, the one who is hungry, as we know. Hunger is the best appetite. Nor does he who has not grown exceedingly drowsy sleep with pleasure, who truly enjoys sleep. The weary, exhausted person who needs to lie down for an hour, he experiences sleep as a true paradise. The one who has grown exceedingly drowsy, nor does he perceive joy who has not first felt sorrow. The one who suffers first will afterward perceive true joy and the value of joy. Thus, by way of example, he says, in the same way, we shall not enjoy the eternal blessings unless we renounce the fleeting things of this life, unless we set aside certain things of this world. And if we try to enjoy them all now, we will not enjoy them there. We will go without certain things here for our own benefit, so as to enjoy them there. We want them both here and there that cannot be. The two together cannot happen. You will go without certain things here, and he will give them to you there. And just as you feel a special pleasure when you deprive yourself of something and then enjoy it. Exactly, so it must be for every person who wants to live that life as well. Whoever sets out to enjoy all the so-called good things of this world, the things called worldly, called fleshly, called self-serving, called egotistical, let him know that he is laboring in vain. He will not enjoy them there. That is why he says the bitter things are needed for the good things to be appreciated. The bitter things are needed. He has another thought further on, which he speaks concerning the soul and the body. Let me give you this one too. The body, he says, joined to the soul, comes out of the darkness of the womb into the light. The body, he says, together with the soul, comes out of the mother's womb into the light. The soul now joined to the body, a human being from then on, joined to the body, is bound up in the darkness of the body. The soul remains within the darkness of the body, just as the body remained within the mother's womb. Therefore, he says, one must hate and discipline the body as an enemy and adversary of the soul. For this reason, he says, the body should be seen as a prison that afflicts and torments the soul. In other words, he means that death, the liberation of the soul from the body, is a good thing. Regardless of whether we do not want this dissolution, it is good nonetheless. And a person ought to regard his soul as imprisoned, just as he was imprisoned in his mother's womb. So the soul is imprisoned within the body. But we don't grasp the matter that way. We look only at the body. We don't look also at the soul. And we talk only about the body. We don't talk about the soul, for at every moment that the body dissolves, the soul triumphs. It exists. It rejoices. It is set free. This we do not know. And a person must reflect deeply on this, for an abundance of foods and overeating stir up the passions of human wickedness. Take heed, then, since this separation will take place one day. Whether you want it or not, be careful about what you eat, what you indulge in, and what you take into yourself, because these things cause harm. And see to it, self-control of the stomach humbles the passions and saves the soul. So just as one day the soul will depart from our midst, as the body too departs when it reaches 9 months and leaves the womb, so the soul too will depart from the body. So watch carefully now, he says, practice discernment and self-restraint, so as to make things easier for the soul, which whether you want it to or not, will one day let go of all this and depart. For that is how it is, how it is, how it is, how it is, we want to delay it. However much we want to hold it fast, it makes no difference, it will leave. And however much it may struggle not to leave, leave it will, as we said in a discussion the same saint gave the other day. He says that God has appointed a span of time for every person, and when that time comes, the person will depart from this world. Like the child, he says, that is conceived in the mother's womb. The moment it reaches 9 months, it leaves, however much you might wish. Otherwise, it makes no difference. The labor will begin, and it will be born. Exactly so with the soul as well, unless, of course, there is a suicide. Unless something else of that kind happens, where the person is now responsible because he cut the thread of his life short before its time. Next, I see here beside it another point, which I will also bring to your attention. For example, he says, just as the body, when it comes forth from its mother's womb incomplete, it may be a 7-month-old premature infant, or one born at 5 months. It comes forth not fully developed, not sufficiently formed as it should be, in order to live. Just as the body, coming out of the mother's womb incomplete, cannot be reared, that is, cannot survive and grow, so too the soul, having gone out of the body and not having succeeded in the knowledge of God and a virtuous way of life, cannot be saved or receive theosis. That is, the soul must depart from here in such a condition that it can live together with God. For just as the body, when it does not come out properly from the mother's womb, does not survive but dies, being born prematurely and incomplete, so too the soul of man must be set in order here, It is not said in order there. The soul must be said in order here. This, of course, is a care that every person bears. The person himself will see to it that he completes the soul and delivers it up complete. There are many people who have a soul, but have not completed it so as to be able to deliver it up. And it is not only those who remain far from God, who bear only the name of man and are not human beings at all. They are inhuman because they take no interest in their immortal soul, since one day he will take it from their hand, and woe to them if they do not deliver it up in good order. There are also other people who are religious, other people who go into church, light candles, keep icons in their home. They have many things to tell you about the faith, and they have done nothing for their soul. The only way, if you want to build up your soul, is Holy Communion. Whatever you do, however many good works you may perform, if you have no part in Holy Communion, you accomplish nothing. It is the man Jesus who builds up the person. Christ builds up the person. Since Christ is not received in communion, the person therefore does not become fit for the kingdom of heaven. Christ became man so that man might become Christ. God became man so that man might become God. This is the reason. So if this means is not used by the person, the matter remains to the person's own loss. There are many people who are unrepentant, who are unconfessed. They go into church, yet they have no part in the mysteries, no part in Holy Communion. And if they do meet Holy Communion, they meet it seasonally, at Pascha, at Christmas, and so on, and unprepared, without any preparation. They may simply keep off oil for one day, as they say, they will not eat, they will eat olives, and they are of the opinion that this is everything, and settles the matter. They blame the clergy, they blame the confessors, and so on, that they are sinful, that they are not fit in their holiness to hear their sins, or that they have no need of confession. They grade themselves and pronounce themselves sinless, which they are not. But above all, they aim against the clergy, that the clergy are not capable. He is capable and worthy to give Holy Communion, to commune them, but he is not capable of hearing their confession. Well, how do these two things fit together? If he is not good enough for the one, he is not good enough for the other either. It does not hold. It is simply Satan deceiving you and keeping you away from this means. This work the person himself must do. If the person does not take in hand this work of his soul, the soul will go out one day, whether we want it to or not. But it will present itself incomplete, and it is not possible for it to remain together with God. This miscarriage, for it is a miscarriage. The steward who perfects, who completes the person, the soul, and presents it as it ought to be, is Christ. Does it not strike you that when we commune the whole Christ? We do not commune body and blood of Christ. We commune the body and the blood of Christ, the whole Christ. And in the Old Testament, where this type of Holy Communion existed, in the Lamb is offered whole, roasted, cooked, but also the feet and the head and the entrails, everything within, because they were depicting this Lamb, the Lamb of Christ, so that when a person takes him, he takes him whole, both the head of Christ and the noose of Christ and the inward parts of Christ and the feet of Christ and the hands of Christ and the hands of Christ, the whole Christ. And a mistake is made when those who administer communion to us say, the servant of God communes in body and blood of Christ. No, the article must be put in front, the body and the blood of Christ. However infinitesimally small this little piece may be, this pearl that he gives us contains the whole Christ. He is broken and distributed, yet never divided, eaten, yet never consumed. A mystery of mysteries is taking place here. Of course, in our wretchedness, we try to examine these things through reason and science. And with the compass and with the pencil, it does not work that way. Take the sun and take a mirror. What will you see in that mirror? A sun, break that mirror and make it into 1,000 pieces. What will you see? One sun, yet each mirror holds one within it. One sun in each mirror. So this is the way for a person to complete his soul, so that when he departs tomorrow, for whether we want it or not, we will depart, each of us on some other train. Others have left sooner, we will leave a little later. He must do this, so that he does not depart from this world incomplete, for as with an incompletely formed child, the unfinished child, the baby that comes out not fully formed when the birth happens too early, is fit for nothing. It does not develop. It does not grow. It does not come to maturity. So too the soul that departs from this world unprepared, not complete, is not fit for the kingdom of heaven. And I tell you that most of the world remains outside, because people do not do this work. And this work comes down to two things. We at least are speaking to Orthodox, to the baptized. Our subject is repentance, confession, and Holy Communion. This must be done daily. The nourishment of the soul is not seasonal. And just as the flesh is fed and cherished once, twice, three, four times a day, so it must be with the soul. St. Ambrose of Milan has a beautiful observation, where he says he gave us this food, this bread, as a daily bread, and we have made it annual. He gave it to us for every day. Indeed, this is the very purpose of saying the Our Father before Holy Communion, with the words, give us this day our daily, our supersubstantial bread. It is not speaking of bread from the bakery. That is another kind of bread. That fire is one thing, that bread another, that table another. He is speaking of the church. The fire of the Godhead is one thing. The bread that becomes the body of Christ is another, and this spiritual table is another. For man is twofold in nature. He has flesh and he has spirit. There is the material table that feeds the body, and rightly so, for God has given it 1,002 good things to feed this body, and there is also the spiritual table. As often as he sits at the material table so many times a day, not a year at the spiritual table man does not sit down. Why does he not sit down? Because he wants to stop sinning. It is sin that separates a person. When a person stops sinning, everything is set in order. Everything appears right, reasonable, and well arranged. So let us not stand far off in these matters of preparation. They are simple. Baptism is grace. It cleanses a person from ancestral sin, and if one is baptized as an adult, also from his willful sins. Repentance and confession are a second baptism. They are grace upon grace. The mystery of repentance and confession takes up the sins committed after baptism. I do not know whether you have noticed that. When the apostles preached to the Jews who had put Christ to death, they said, "This Jesus whom you crucified, God has raised from the dead." And the Jews acknowledged that they had indeed done this. Read the second chapter of the Acts of the Apostles. There you will find the record of those first events between the Jews who had put Christ to death and the disciples. At one point, recognizing what they had done, they asked, "Men and brethren, what shall we do?" He did not tell them to go to confession, because they had not yet been baptized. He told them to believe, and each one to be baptized in the name of Christ. Baptism cleansed everything, many people say. Look, they killed Christ, and yet they were told to confess. Why, then, do you tell us to confess, but they were baptized? Baptism cleanses everything that came before it. And confession, the second baptism, cleanses whatever comes after baptism for man. Being man falls, whether by word or by deed or by the eye or by the ear, man will fall. It is not possible for him to remain without sin. Without sin is God alone. And God, knowing this weakness of man, established this mystery of his love for mankind. For you know what the saints say, if the mystery of repentance and confession did not exist, no one would be saved. There is no one who lived a single day without sin. Did Abraham live a single day without sin? No one. All have sinned. There has never been a person who did not sin. So today there is no other way. If a person wishes to fashion a soul that can live on with God beyond the grave, then to complete it here. Touch-ups are done, Consider the work that a photographer does. My father has died and I want to have a photograph of him to make a framed picture in the house. So I take a small photograph to the photographer. He makes an enlargement for you. And on the basis of what is in the photograph he retouches, he fills in, he adds, he removes, and he presents to me a person. This retouching of souls, provided there is a photograph, provided there is something there, is what the church does afterward through the memorial services and the offerings. The church does not abandon the soul. The one church, the Orthodox Church, which receives a person at his birth, hands him over at his death, and accompanies him until the second coming. Does anyone else do this? You die a papist. You go like a flattened tin can. No one accompanies you. They do not have these things. They have nothing. You die a Protestant, the same, an evangelical, the same, like a flattened tin can. Orthodoxy alone receives a person when he is born from the new mother, hands him over on the day of his death, once a place of repose has been prepared, and accompanies him until the end of the ages, through the Holy Eucharist, and it helps him in these small details. But there has to be something there, a foundation, an actual person. The person has to be viable, as we say. You know how it is. The baby has made it to the 8th month, to the 9th, it is out of danger. That is the very example this man brings. Take this seriously to heart, because there are many people, if not among us, then perhaps even among us, but certainly all around us, who call themselves good people, decent and so on, yet they do not have these things, or they treat them as secondary, when in fact they are the primary things. The one thing a person needs is spiritual healing from the fall and the Holy Eucharist. And to attain these, he must take the necessary steps. Put an end to sin and change his life. That settles the matter. No other way and no other door leads to the kingdom of heaven. This is the only way. All of this, then, flows out of what this holy man says. Pay close attention to what I am telling you. The old people used to say, a head that bows is never cut off. And David, who is a poor soul, caught fast in sin. In one verse of one of his psalms, he says, you remembered, O Lord, that we are dust. In other words, what do you expect from a man made of dust? What is he going to do? Is he going to do the works of angels? He is clothed in flesh. And what will the flesh do? It will fall. Remember then, he says, that I am dust. And elsewhere he says, your mercy shall pursue me all the days of my life. It pursues us in order to catch us, but we do not want it. We ourselves do not want it, you know. A shepherd can easily find a lost sheep and save it from being eaten by the wolf. If the sheep wants to return and bleats, but if it does not bleat, if it goes and hides, huddled somewhere, the shepherd cannot find it. The shepherd may pass right by it without finding it, and the wolf gets to it first and devours it. This is what happens to some people who are unwilling to return. For man, and especially modern man, does not want Christ. He does not want Christ's gospel. He does not want the things we are discussing now. Why? Do you know why? Because it exposes his sinful way of life. It exposes his sinful way of life. He does not want to come into the light, because the gospel is light. It lays a person bare. Can you hide from Christ? Can you hide from the church, from the gospel? You may say, these are only fairy tales. There is no immortality. But the reality is quite different. And man does not want to come face to face with precisely this. I say, because his deeds will be exposed. That is the reason. As this holy man continues, he expresses another view in answer to those who take issue with evil people. If they take issue with evil people, then they must also take issue with the evil one, the source of evil one. The first evil one is Satan, as you know. Indeed, many blame God, asking why Satan should exist at all, why evil should exist, why there is not only good, and so on. What they really want is no struggle whatsoever. They want everything easy, with no one to call them out, to be set inside a glass jar, and at the end to be handed a prize on top of it, without ever having struggled at all. But this man holds another view, that even the wicked are needed, even the wicked are needed. The wicked, in the final reckoning, will of course be punished, yet for us the wicked become benefactors. Because when you provoke me, my forbearance is revealed. When you harm me, my long-suffering is revealed. When you insult me, what I truly am deep down comes to light. When everything is pleasant, who I really am does not show. Sometimes, you see how we put it, the moment someone steps on your sore spot, you say, I am good, but you are not good. You flare up. But what does that mean? You were provoked. And so, being provoked, you turn out to be wicked. So you are wicked, and you are only waiting for an occasion to show it. What I want is for you to be good when no one provokes you, and good again even when they do provoke you. That is precisely when it matters most that your goodness be shown. We must not be good with the good, and evil with the evil. If we answer someone as we think he deserves, we may say, that was exactly what he had coming, and I was justified in saying it. Yes, perhaps, as we often put it, you put him in his place, but in doing so, you stepped out of your own place. That is the point. He started it. You had nothing to do with it. Well, let him be the first and only one. Let there be no second. Because if there is a second, namely you reacting, then you have sunk down beside him. I should never have had to argue the matter at all. Do not let it bring the house down. Do not make something out of it. None of that. Others also say, but I have my dignity. Yes, but you will lose the dignity befitting a Christian. If you insist on preserving your personal dignity, you will lose your Christian dignity. Weigh the two and see which carries greater weight. Wrongly, then, in any case, even though in the end he too will be punished, he expects to get some prize. Because certain ones say, since it was I who became the occasion through my malice, and you are sitting your examination to win a prize, then I too ought to get a share of it. Since he is helping you to be healed, there is even wordplay here. You will see what this man says. Whatever God does, he does as the good one, and he does it through human beings. Whatever he makes well, he makes for man. But whatever man does, he does for himself. He makes it for himself, whether good or evil. God makes nothing for himself. He makes everything for man. Whatever man makes, he makes for himself, whether good or evil. If it is good, it will help him. If it is evil, it will drag him down and sink him. In any case, he makes nothing for God. Do not marvel at the prosperity of the wicked, so that you are not swept along by it. Yes, the wicked rise. This, after all, has always been a question among the faithful, and perhaps even today, among some who are not well versed in these matters, who may have advanced a little. There are questions, why do the impious rise? Why do they get ahead, as we say? Why do they prosper? David said this too, and Jeremiah put this very question to God. Why do the impious flourish? And he received his answer from God. So here too the saint says, that you may not marvel at the prosperity of the wicked. Know this, know it. And what are we to know, Holy Father? Just as cities keep their executioners, and yet do not praise the wickedness of their disposition, the cities do have executioners, do they not? And they keep them. What do they use them for? To put others to death. They have executioners, he says, and that is how he presents the wicked, that they are the executioners of the good. Of the so called good, through these wicked ones, the good are chastened, because they stray from the right road. In the end, the wicked too will be judged, these executioners as well, but these executioners will still exist. And just as, he says, cities keep their executioners and do not praise the wickedness of their disposition, but through them they punish those who deserve it, those deserving of punishment, in the very same way God too permits the wicked to oppress in the affairs of this life. God allows it, he says. He permits evil men to oppress them, so that through them he may punish the impious, that is, so that the impious may be chastened through these wicked people. The impious person is not merely the atheist or the heretic. We ourselves are impious, we believe. Yet at the same time we sin. because we do not struggle to attain spiritual perfection. Above all, the providence of God and the love of God are directed toward Christians. Those who have entered the church but do not want to enter in the right way. I am an Orthodox Christian, someone says, but I refuse to have children. You will be severely chastened. I am an Orthodox Christian, but I do not fast. You will be severely chastened, do you understand? I am an Orthodox Christian, and I steal, and I lie and I swear falsely, and I keep my girlfriend, I keep my lover. These things cannot be. You will take a sound beating, so that God may leave you without excuse, not in order to do you harm. The poison in the pharmacy is given as a medicine. It is not given as something to put you to death. It is given as a medicine. Here Paul gave the command to excommunicate the man in Corinth guilty of incest. Read it in the first letter to the Corinthians, the 5th chapter, that they excommunicate him. An excommunication, yes, hand over the flesh to the devil. He says that it may fall sick, so that the spirit may be saved. And he saved him, as it is recorded in the 2nd chapter in the 2nd letter to the Corinthians. These means are imposed and used as part of God's discipline. But afterward, he also delivers these evil men over to judgment. They too will be handed over to be judged, because they did not act as servants of God. God did not have them as his servants, nor did he make them evil in order to use them wickedly against other people. Rather, serving their own wickedness, they inflicted these sufferings upon others. Being wicked themselves, they were made use of against the other impious men. So even those who are called wicked among us often benefit us by their behavior. They force us to find ourselves and to turn back to God and to do things rightly. Not in that counterfeit way we Christians so often do. For we hold on to the label, but we do not have the goods. Take, for example, a sign reading, "The Lily Cleaners," and you go inside and a fly eats you alive, filth and a foul stench. Or take a sign reading, "Honesty Grocery," and you go inside and they knock your teeth out with their thieving. It has only the label, it does not have the goods. That is what we are. We are Orthodox Christians without orthodoxy. We believe without works worthy of the faith and of right adherence to it. Next, this holy man speaks of how God speaks to men. Many times people say, "And how am I to understand that God is urging me toward this, to do this thing or to do that?" He holds the opinion that God will not be able to find some way to speak to man. So, listen to what he says. Those of you who have read Job, the book of Job, and those who have not, should read it. You will be greatly benefited by it, and you will learn many things from it. The things that people suppose to be mysteries, hidden away and unknown to them, are found in the book of Job. There you will find what he, too, is saying here. He says, "Man alone is receptive to God. Only man," he says, "is the one who holds converse with God. He is receptive, able to speak with God. For this living being alone does God address man. For this living being alone does God address. By night through dreams, and by day through the nous, the spiritual intellect. By night," he says, "he speaks to man through dreams. By day, when he is awake, he casts into the nous corresponding thoughts, which, if the man takes hold of them and consents and is willing, will lead him to what is right." Job says that God visits man 3 and 4 times at night in his sleep. And indeed, those men who perhaps even make the sign of the cross, that is, who believe in God, he speaks to them all. He urges them all. He wants to forestall them all, just as he wanted to forestall Cain as well. Cain overcame the obstacles God placed before him and did as he pleased. In any case, God speaks to him. Let me give you an example, because many people may not even be able to grasp this. Has it never happened to you that, in the evening, you made a decision after discussing it with your family or with someone you work with concerning some business matter, a purchase, a journey, or something else of importance? And once you had settled it in the evening and said the so-called okay, All right, and perhaps even fixed an appointment for the morning when you would meet to take it further. And you lie down and sleep. You wake up in the morning and telephone him and say that we will not go there. This will not happen. Well, how did this come about? We will not go. I don't know how. He was not awake. He did not discuss it. He did not speak with anyone. He consulted no one. Nothing. He simply lay down and slept. And in the morning he woke up with a different decision, and he acted on it. How did that happen? You changed the decision you had made the night before. Who changed your mind? And how does such certainty come over you all at once? You answer firmly and say, no, it will not happen. We are not going. Cancel it. Call them. Nothing is going ahead. Why? Tell us why. He cannot explain why. A conversation took place on high while he slept that night. These matters were examined during the night. It is God who speaks. God has countless ways of speaking, but we expect a letter from God, an official document bearing his signature, so that we can go around showing that his signature has been authenticated. As if God had no way to speak to man and to guide him. There is a simplicity. My God, illumine me. And he has a way to illumine you in countless ways, so as to set you where your true benefit lies in that matter. God speaks, he says, by night through dreams, by day through the nous, the spiritual intellect, and through all things he foretells and foreshadows the good things to come for those who are worthy of him. In other words, he speaks to his people in countless ways. He may tell them, write it down for them, or give it to them on paper. Not only within them, he gives them inner assurance and creates confidence in them. And many times a person will say, God is going to do something. I cannot tell you what he will do, but I know that he will do something. This is the one who communicates in some way with the Creator, without being able to put into human words how this communication with God takes place. And you see certain people whose outward circumstances are worse than ours. These people keep their spirits high and press forward, while we who have better circumstances than they do are lost. We have swallowed our tongue. We don't know what is happening. We live as though we were orphans. And this even though we say, Our Father who art in heaven, for what sense does it make to have a Father in heaven? And yet, on the other hand, to live as an orphan. These are the people who do not keep their plates clean, so that they might receive the corresponding answer from the Living One and walk by it. In any case, this is what this holy man says, and he has yet one more thing. Allow me to share this with you as well. The acquaintance of man with God. Man knows God and is known by God. It is what another father says, hearing in place of hearing. For you to be known by God, you must first want to know God. Not merely to believe, but to know. Because if we are asked whether we believe, we can easily say no. So you don't believe, you are unbelievers. No, we know. For we know God. We have seen him in our life. We have seen him in action. For us it is no longer faith. It is knowledge. There is no Greek, there is no Greek family that has not seen God, whether the person of God, or the Theotokos, or the saint. Show us anyone who has not seen him, God. Do we now merely believe, or do we know? We know, if I tell you that I do not believe, I am not denying reality. I know. I have seen the wonder-working hand of God in so many instances that the matter is no longer open to any debate whatsoever. Do I now need faith as the evidence of things not seen? I already know it from experience, thus, he says. Man knows God and is known by God. The one who is ever diligent is inseparable from God. Who knows God and who is known by God? The one who is ever diligent is inseparable from God. How is man inseparable from God? By the way, I told you a moment ago, by which he comes and becomes one with God. And through prayer, prayer too is what unites man with God. He has communion with the beyond. Without knowing how can I show it here and now, before the sound can reach the edge of this hall? Another person picks it up in California, in Australia. Man has made these things, and God nothing. Man can be present everywhere today. Well then, is God not present everywhere? He is the one who made these very things for us to discover, and use, and marvel at. What a craftsman he must have been, then, who made such things. Is he nothing? So this one, he says, who has a daily relationship with God, whether through the Holy Eucharist? For he says, he who eats my flesh and drinks my blood abides in me, and I in him. He who eats my flesh, not he who has eaten once. He who eats my flesh continually and drinks my blood abides in me, and I in him. He becomes one with God. And through prayer, too, he has a communication in which he both sends and receives. For man is both transmitter and receiver. He sends to God and receives from God. You know, a transmitter is a transmitter and a receiver is a receiver. My tape recorder records, but it has to stop recording in order to play. It cannot do both at once here, though this happens at the same time. Man sends to God through prayer and receives an answer, and so he is inseparable from God. And man becomes inseparable from God, being good above all and mastering every pleasure. If you want to have a relationship with God, you will limit the enjoyment of your pleasures. If you set out to drain every pleasure to the dregs, you cannot have a relationship with God. This is something that cuts you off. You have no contact with God. You want contact. Then you will hold back. You will stay within what is lawful. You will keep to what is necessary, to what is essential. And there are, of course, some who could tell us that they really are self-controlled, that they have no dealings with pleasures and so on. But is it perhaps because they have grown old? Perhaps because their powers have abandoned them? For you know, as Basil the Great says, it is not virtue when you simply cannot do a thing, and so sin abandons you. You did not abandon it. It abandoned you. You are unable to do it. It abandoned you. It left you once again. I want you, he says, to be able to have the power, and yet for you, by your own will, to hold yourself back from it. And he puts it this way here, not from any lack of the supply of these things, but by your own will and self-restraint willingly. I can, but I do not do it. I avoid it. I can eat, but I will not eat that much. I can enjoy this, but I will not take it, so as to create those conditions in which I will be together with God. Because when a man wants to cling to his belly, and to the world, and to the dust, he cannot at the same time hold on to God. A small struggle is needed, and a man needs to deprive himself a little of the so-called good things of this world in order to have some relationship with God. I have found two or three more things, not that everything else isn't good, but these caught my imagination a little. You know, many people are called makers of human beings, and properly speaking, a maker of human beings could be called someone who has children, who produces people. To have children is an easy thing. Anyone can have children, can produce people, little human creatures, and so on. But to make human beings who truly bear the name of man, that is a different and lofty work, and it is a labor that only certain people accomplish. Listen to how this holy man puts it. He says the following. He ought to be called a maker of human beings, the one who is able to tame the uninstructed. That is a maker of human beings, someone who can take a coarse man, untaught in religion, and untaught in general about his character, and make a true human being of him. If he truly makes him human, if he inspires in him a love of learning and education, seeks to bring him to such a state, works upon him, and helps him first to desire to learn, and then actually to learn, this education must, of course, be not worldly but according to God. For no matter what a person may learn according to the world, if it does not bear the seal of God, it will not endure. It is not genuine. It too must bear the seal of God. In the same way, those who reform people living dissolute lives and lead them to a virtuous way of life pleasing to God should be called makers of human beings. Likewise, he says, those who help people living far from God to come near and embrace the way of life that comes from God, people who possess these abilities and dedicate themselves to this work may also be called makers of human beings. Because they reshape human beings, his mother made him, but she made a piece of flesh. Now we will take this piece of flesh and bring it to its full worth, because a person comes out like an unworked block of marble from a quarry. But for that marble to become a statue, some work must be done upon it, you see, exactly so. And not exactly, but far worse, because the marble sits and accepts everything it will receive, while the human being kicks back, has his reasons, his, I don't want this, and 1,002 other things. And how much shrewdness it takes, how much forbearance it takes, how much art it takes to sculpt upon that piece of flesh, a human being fit for the kingdom of heaven. So these, he says, ought to be called makers of human beings, as those who reshape people for gentleness and self-restraint, our happiness and good hope, healing the wounds of human beings. You need meekness, and you also need self-control, so that you may reshape the souls of men and be given this title, a maker of human beings. There is one more thing that is a question for many people, and it is this, that we call people blessed without having paid attention. You know, many times we call people blessed who have succeeded in the world. As we say, they are rich, they are noble, they are this and that, but they do not have God. Since we do not know how to assess things and discern where the true weight lies, we say that these are the fortunate ones, the people who deserve our praise. But listen to what he says. In the judgment of those who think rightly, the rich and well-born man, if he lacks the cultivation of the soul and every virtue, is truly wretched. He is saying that the man whom people regard as rich and noble, if he is without the cultivation of the soul, that is, as we would say, without God, and without every virtue, is wretched. He is not blessed. So do not call him blessed. When Christ is absent, God is absent, and you know how many homes could have been blessed three times over if only they had brought Christ into their home. Sadly, they have not brought Christ into their home, and so they suffer and are tormented. How greatly they need Christ. For in such cases, Christ, Christos, spelled with an iota, becomes Christos, spelled with an eta, good and beneficial. As it says in Psalm 33, taste and see that the Lord is good. There the word Christos, good, is spelled with an eti. The Lord is beneficial. You need him. Many people would have found peace, slept, soundly lived in tranquility, and enjoyed long life if only they had received Christ.